Ladies and gentlemen, coming to you live from the Sleep Deprivation Institute's secret underwater headquarters somewhere off the coast of Iowa, it's the man dedicated to keeping the internet completely wired. This is Which Goes Off with Widget Walls.
Friends are dead. Not what it used to be. Now you'll never have a place like home to rest your head.
Hello, hello, and hello. This is Widget Walls, and you are listening to Widge Goes Off here on QuickStopEntertainment.com. So welcome back, everybody. We're here at another Monday. It is October, finally. And that means that we are headed towards Halloween, which I can't wait for. I am going to be basically spending the entire weekend before Halloween and the day before Halloween, because it's a Tuesday, and Halloween, watching horror movies of all different time frames, of different eras, of different levels of quality, because there is something just marvelous about a really terrible, terrible horror movie. So I'm so thrilled that we're in October. I can't even begin to tell you. But anyway, so here we are with another Widge Goes Off, and I want to start with something a little different. So I'm at Publix tonight, okay? And I'm buying deli meat and some cheese. And I think I've stumbled onto something here. So, you know, you look at, and they've got all the Boar's Head products, right? So I'm looking at these various cheeses that they have out. And there's this block of cheese. And, you know, I mean, if you've seen, it's one of those big-ass deli blocks of cheeses, right? That you could, you know, that you could literally use in hand-to-hand combat if you could lift it, right? So it was a full-on fresh block of cheese. And there was an actual sticker on it that said, must sell by 5407. So that's May 4th, 2007, right? Now, if you look at, so they slice off some cheese, right? And they put it into a bag. Now, the bag that they put it in says that they recommend that you consume, first of all, the meat products in about 2 or 3 days, which makes sense because that's meat, right? But the cheese products, they say you should consume in 4 days from when you purchased it. Now, how is it that somehow magically, from the time that it left the deli and was put into this plastic bag and I took it home, does that make the shelf life of this cheese go from, what is it, May? That's literally like 7 months, right? So 7 months down to 4 days. How is that possible? Is it the car ride home that breaks it? It's overwhelmed by... Is it, you know, my car? It's nothing wrong with my car. In fact, I keep my car really damn cold. I'm driving around, you know, in winter with the air going because I like to have myself, you know, pseudo cryogenically suspended. I don't age as much when I'm in my car. That's how cold I keep my car. All right? There's nothing wrong with my fridge. My fridge is probably colder than the place where they keep the cheese, honestly. So what is it is it because it's in a block? That doesn't make sense because they're constantly whittling down the block, right? So it's not strength in numbers, right? It's not because it has all its cheesy slice friends all together in one glob. Why is that? How is that possible? I don't know. I think it's bullshit. Maybe it's a conspiracy to make us buy more cheese. I don't know. And I'm paranoid about my food. I mean, you know, you can't play with my head like that. I'm the guy who's literally putting together something, and I'm like, oh my God, is this mold on the bread? Look at this. Look at this black speck. Is that mold? And my wife's like, that's your sandwich, and you've just put pepper on it. That's pepper. And I'm like, oh, of course. Well, I was just being safe. So, I mean, I'm nuts about that stuff. So you can't play with my mind like this. While we're talking about Publix, let me bring up something else here that's just absolutely, that drives me nuts. I couldn't believe this. Did you know that they have when it comes to, like, clothing detergent, right? I actually buy, they have all these different kinds of stuff, right? I mean, they have scented stuff, and then they realized, well, we can make it unscented, right, and sell some more, and we could have 5 or 6 different scents, and then we could have, you know, stuff for white clothes. I actually buy, like, the dark formula of stuff, right, because all my clothing is black. So there's, like, dark cheer, right, and then there's dark woolite, right, which is, I guess, what happens when detergent goes evil, right? And then the original is lying in a coffin at the bottom of a bay somewhere. Right, Kurt? Anyway, so I actually buy it because that makes sense to me, that you could have a detergent made for black clothing, right? That at least makes sense to me. But now I saw the other day that they have Cheer True Fit. And this is supposed to help your clothes fit better, or at least stay fit the same way that they were before. Hang on a second. Where is it? I'm going to bring up the actual... Yes, Cheer True Fit helps clothes keep their shape. Is it just me, or are they just making shit up now? I mean, come on. How is that possible? I mean, dark clothes help them stay dark. I'm good with that. Help it stay the same shape? How is that even possible in any universe? I have no idea. Anyway, I'm sorry. Hey, Widge goes off. I never said about what, right? So, anyway, where were we? Oh, yes. So thank you for letting me get that off my chest. What the fuck? All right, so let's go to the box office. Self-medication. Let's see. Open Season comes in at number 1 with $23 million, and that's because it was pretty much alone out there as far as the non-Disney films that actually looked like they could be moderately funny. This one at least looked like a rental, so that's why it did as well as it did. $23 million with an $85 million budget. The Guardian, which I knew about, but I actually didn't realize was, you know, coming out this weekend, comes in at 17.6, and no idea what that made. But that looked like, I don't know. I wish Kevin Costner would figure out his career and start doing good things again. I mean, come on. I mean, you just, look, say what you want about Kevin Costner, but Bull Durham. Okay, what can you say about Bull Durham? You can't say anything bad about Bull Durham. I don't even like sports movies, and I liked Bull Durham. So there's that. Jackass number 2 comes in at number 3 with $14 million. It's done 51. It only cost 11.5 to make, as we mentioned before, so they're very happy. School for Scoundrels opens at number 4 with $9 million. Jet Li's Fearless drops 55%, which is normal, to $4.7 million. It's done 17.7 to date. Gridiron Gang comes in at number 6, and it dropped the usual 50% or so. It's done $33 million. It costs $30 to make, so it'll make up what it doesn't make here in video. So no worries about that. Illusionist is about to start making money. It only dropped 14.7%. Of course, it didn't have very far to fall. It only has 2.8 for the weekend. But it's done 31 to date with 16.5 as the budget. Flyboys, it dropped 61%, which is, again, very surprising to me, because this at least looked like, you know, it was worth a matinee. So that's surprising. It's done almost not even $10 million, and it cost $60 to make, so that's gotta suck. Black Dahlia drops to number 9 with $2 million, dropped 53%. That's perfectly normal. And so it's sliding out of sight. And the big winner is still, for the top 10, Little Miss Sunshine, which hangs on to number 10. Did $2 million. It's done 53, and it cost $8 to make. So let's review, shall we, class? Who are the big winners? The big winners are the people that don't spend a lot of money and therefore can make a lot of money. So, you know, what is the highest budgeted thing on here? Open Season, right? It did $23 million. So when you consider it's going to drop maybe, you know, 50%, that'll take it down to a little bit over 11, right? So to 34, 35. Then if it keeps dropping 50%, it won't even make back its production budget in the total gross before it leaves, okay? Flyboys is next with $60 million and hasn't even made 10, and it's on its way out. The big winners are the people with the small budgets. So, you know, I keep saying this, but, you know, no, I know you people believe me, but they don't believe me. Anyway, so there's your box office. A couple things that I want to talk about, first of all. Well, one thing mainly, and it's Mark Cuban. He's billionaire.com guy, right? basically, he's talking about YouTube, that he says only a moron would purchase the wildly popular startup. And I don't know. I mean, far be it from me, because he makes more money than I do, to say what's right and what's wrong, but I think he's out of his mind. Now, granted, it's YouTube is probably a losing battle right now as far as if somebody wanted to go invest in it. And the reason for that is because it's losing money hand over fist, because all of that, I mean, all of the stuff that we post, you know, from YouTube, we're not using our bandwidth to let you view the videos. And I'm talking about over at Need Coffee, right? Anything that we post, we're not using our bandwidth. It's YouTube's bandwidth. You know, we're piggybacking off of their site. I was reading on Robert Cringely's column on PBS, and if you don't read his column, you really should. It's a really great technology column. I'll try and include a link to that. But basically, he was talking about the fact that there are people who make their money off of free video hosting from YouTube. I mean, there's performers that have samples up of their stuff just in the little, you know, the YouTube embedded video player, so that they don't have to do anything. You watch their stuff, you like them, you buy it from them. And so, you know, YouTube makes nothing off the deal. And yet they have all this overhead to deal with. And so that's the only reason I would agree with him, for a completely different reason, is that I don't know, they're not set up yet to make enough money for it to be worth your while to get into. But, but he talks about I'll have a link to this article, of course. But he talks about they're going to be sued out of existence. Now, we've talked about this before with the whole Universal Music thing versus Warner Brothers thing, that you know, the right thing to do would be to, if somebody starts threatening you, to cut their shit off. I mean, this article says that you've got YouTube counts for 1/3 of all the video viewing. Wait a minute, let me make sure I'm saying this. Yes. 1/3 of the U.S. web video audience is what it says. 3 times that of Google, 2x that of MySpace, okay? This is a power for getting your stuff out there. So while I agree that if they are hosting something that is, you know, copyrighted by somebody else, that they are breaking the law, in essence, okay, then, but, I mean, what do the people who have the copyrighted, what are they making off of it? You know, we go back to the whole Lazy Sunday thing. Lazy Sunday let an entire world know that Saturday Night Live occasionally had stuff worth watching. Because I hadn't seen anything. I mean, I hadn't seen anything for years from Saturday Night Live. Because I just, you know, it was Saturday Night Live and it hadn't been funny in a generation. So, I mean, we've talked about that to death. But basically, I think YouTube making these deals with folks like Warner, right, with folks like Universal, getting in bed with these people so they can figure out how to make a little bit of money so that they'll shut the fuck up. And then, you know, maybe the right way to do it is also to, you know, you'd be able to see what works. Let's look at what happened with Grouper recently. And I got this from Cringely. Is that basically they bought, Sony Pictures bought Grouper. And what Cringely says about this is that you've got all of these people in the movie studios who are just lost when it comes to figuring out what it is that people want these days, especially like kids these days, these crazy kids, right? They would much rather stay home on a Friday night and, you know, watch shit that's been posted online, terrible, terrible videos that have been posted online, and make their own videos and then turn around and post them online, than go out and watch some shitty movie in a cinema and pay, you know, $9 for it. Although it was interesting, while I was at home, because I went to my hometown this weekend, they had their multiplex cinema there that was basically all tickets $6 all times. I was like, well, that's fascinating. So, and from what I can tell, it's the first run theater still. But basically, what Cringely says is that they're buying Grouper to do basically test runs on things, because Grouper isn't as large as YouTube, obviously, but, you know, 430,000 registered users. But basically, you've got, they want to have their own video hosting site that they can try stuff on to see what do people want to watch. Because it's becoming very obvious that the nobody's impressed anymore, really, with, you know, 200,000 special effects. You know, the whole thing about Superman Returns with the $2 million shot of the bullet bouncing off of Superman's eye that was in the commercial. I mean, was anyone impressed with that? I wasn't impressed with that. So he's got eyes of steel. That's really great. Thanks. Thanks, Brian. But no one's impressed with this anymore. It's all about content. It's all about quality of content. And being able to get people to understand that you've got quality content. You can have the best content in the world, but if nobody knows about it, then you're fucked anyway. So Sony is getting into this with Gruber. You've got YouTube, who's trying to provide information back to folks like Warner. I mean, you know, that way they can tell. I mean, it's basically like, if I was Warner, I would want to get out of the deal. Show me what people are watching. Give me the stats on all of the stuff that I own. What's the most popular music video? You know, throw stuff out there and go, okay, well, this doesn't work. Hell, you could throw out three different versions of the same music video and see which one gets the most play. You know, there's stuff like this. You know they got to be thinking about this. So that's where we're going with all of this. So as far as Mark Cuban thinking that somebody would be a moron to buy YouTube, I mean, like I said, I agree at this point, but for completely different reasons. I think YouTube provides a lot of value to folks, and it's just a matter of them figuring out how to get people paid. Now, what would be fascinating is if, you know, what are they going to have in place for other people? Like, if I was going to upload a video, right? If I was going to upload a video to YouTube, and it's my copyrighted material, or, you know, somebody else, let's say that I was, I'm trying to think of someone else. What is it? Oh, Ask a Ninja. I noticed that Ask a Ninja now, apparently, from what I can tell, their YouTube videos are gone, and they're hosting the stuff themselves on QuickTime. I was trying to go show somebody Ask a Ninja, and I went over to Need Coffee, and one of the embedded Ask a Ninja bits that we had put up there was no longer functional. So I went out to the site, and sure enough, they're hosting it themselves. I find that fascinating. I wonder why that is. But basically, let's say if I'm Ask a Ninja, right? Small, I would assume a small outfit, since it's one guy on camera dressed as a ninja, right? So I'm assuming it's just a few folks, right? So let's assume somebody uploads an Ask a Ninja thing to YouTube. They're obviously not Warner. They're not as large as Warner. But still, do they have the opportunity to get paid? I don't know. That would be fascinating. So, anyway, that's where we are, you know, with online video services. Is they're here to stay. Whatever Mark Cuban says, he's probably just pissed that he didn't think of it first, to be perfectly honest. But as you know, as for them being sued, like I said, if somebody comes up and starts threatening, pull all their shit and then see what happens. Because basically what you're doing by trying to sue YouTube is cutting one third of the internet, the people who view stuff on the internet, you're cutting your stuff out of it. So, you know, why in the hell would you do that? Talk about cutting off your nose to spite your face. Although, you know, this is Hollywood and they do this quite often. So one other thing I want to talk about here, and I had gotten this press release, and this is from Knowledge Adventure Books, and basically they've got a unique make-your-own book program, which is they're doing with John Lithgow. So basically what this is it's, you know, software. Kids will be able to create, and I'm reading this off of the press release here, create, edit, and illustrate and personalize their own books. So they allow kids to publish soft or hardcover copies of their books. And you can create them with a software and order them, and they're published basically print on demand and sent to your homes. You can send them to friends, you can send them to your Aunt Matilda, whatever you want to do. And the software apparently has John Lithgow helping the kids to create their books. He's kind of like their online tutorial type person. And I think that would be cool just anyway to have, you know, even for me to have, you know, John Lithgow. It's like, you know, I need F1 and John Lithgow shows up. And I'm like, hey, Lizardo. So it's like, you know, kind of cool. But basically, I think this is fascinating. I saw this. I'll post a link to their website here. But I didn't see anybody else pick up on this. I just think it's fascinating that we've gotten to the point with self-publishing that you can have kids doing it, at home themselves, and the software is $20. So now, granted, I mean, am I expecting, you know, the works of Shakespeare to come out of this? No, but it's getting kids in on the ground floor of the idea that I can do that. You know what? That's my book on the shelf. Now, granted, it's, you know, the story of the toad that ate a skyscraper or something crazy, you know, the adventure of your imaginary friend Umba, who is a giraffe with an extra leg, or whatever, you know, you would have written when you were a kid. I mean, you know, I mean, think back to the stories that you thought of that you thought were amazing when you were a kid, and just imagine that being in print. Now, that's kind of scary and yet kind of not, right? So I'm so glad that I didn't have this, because there would be, you know, it would be bad. But back to what I was saying. This, I think, is awesome. It gets kids used to the idea that they can be a publisher, that they can create their own books. And, you know, once you've created one, you want to create more. I mean, it's like a drug. Trust me, I know. So, you know, I think that's excellent. And, you know, like I said, I don't know anything about the software. Have not seen it. Have not tried it. John Lithgow, though, is a great actor and a children's book author. So I would assume that he wouldn't put his name or put his, you know, his face on something that sucked. So that's a point in its favor, right? But regardless, just the concept of it excites the hell out of me. So, yeah, very, very impressed and very happy that it's gotten to this point. And, you know, hell, I would be surprised if, you know, Google's got all this books, Google Books, right? If they didn't, you know, put something in place that would allow you to, I mean, obviously you can upload your own stuff and it's searchable now. I mean, my books are available through Google Books. But, you know, wouldn't that be interesting if you were able to just basically publish through Google, you know, and get a hard copy from there? I wonder if it'll be that easy. Kiosks, self-publishing kiosks, you know, stick in the CD-ROM that's got your book loaded on it and go to town. Here are the 10 cover templates that you can choose from. Here are the 5 fonts that you can put your stuff in, and you basically move it around using a touchscreen. God, I love living in the future. Anyway, so that's about all I got to talk about this time. We'll let you off early. So it's going to be interesting to see what happens next weekend, since we've got one of two major Halloween movies opening with the Texas Chainsaw Massacre at the beginning. And, you know, I think it'll do quite well. And how well it does, watch for this, how well it does will prove the fact that plot, when it comes to those movies, means absolutely nothing. I mean, it will prove it wholeheartedly, because it's not like the ending is going to be a shocker or anything, right? Because think about it, it is a prequel, okay? And the reason they went with a prequel is, like I said before, I'm trying not to start laughing, cause just because I think it's so fucking funny, but, you know, not trying to give anything away, but in the remake, you know, Leatherface loses an arm. So they knew that you couldn't have an antagonist running around when his, you know, his weapon of choice is a chainsaw, trying to start it with his teeth. So they went with a prequel. So all these characters, you know, except for the teens that are there to be cannon fodder, are, you know, they're in the remake. So you know that they're not going to, you know, it's not like somebody's going to up and die. You know, it's not like there's going to be some shocking revelation where it turns out they're all ghosts, you know. I mean, I'm always glad to see Arlie Ermey, even though the problem with the remake is that he's scarier than Leatherface, you know, because he is Arlie fucking Ermey. All right, so that was one major problem there. But I will say that Andrew Berniarski, who is playing Leatherface, who is just a great guy, okay, he is an awesome guy, and if there were any justice in the world, he would be Lobo. He would be playing Lobo in a Lobo movie. And if you know what I'm talking about, the DC Comics character, if you've ever seen, you should find the video of him playing. He did like a Lobo thing where he dressed up full on as Lobo, and I swear to God, it's scary as shit. So if there was any justice in the world, there would be a Lobo movie with him. But I'm very glad to see him working. So, you know, but the fact that everyone knows what's going to happen with, you know, the ending of the movie is not going to be a shocker. You know, I think it'll still do well. I'll be surprised if it doesn't do like 30 million or something like that, just because people get off on, you know, what is it? Somebody referred to it as, I saw the subgenre referred to, what was it? Oh, backwoods brutality. I forget where I read that, but whoever came up with that, that's a fucking great way of describing stuff like this. You go off the main road and there are hillbillies and whatnot back there, and they fuck up your life. And not really my thing, but regardless. Anyway, so that's what you can look for next weekend, is I wouldn't be surprised to see, you know, Texas Chainsaw Massacre the Beginning do 30 million. I don't know. And we'll see, because really, it's that. This Halloween, it's like that, as we discussed before, or Saw 3, which comes out, you know, the weekend before Halloween. So that's kind of sad. It's really going to be a DVD Halloween for everybody, I think. So anyway, so that's it. That's all I got to talk about. We'll let you get out of here. Hopefully you have a lovely week. We will have over at Need Coffee. Come check us out, because we're getting into the Halloween spirit, and we're going to be doing some crazy shit over there the first time I get a second to do it. And we got podcasts over there as well. So if you're not sick of hearing my lovely schmo-esque voice, you can come check us out over there and get even more of me. I don't necessarily recommend it, but hey, you know, if maybe you need to commit some atonement for some horrible sin that you've done, I think that would be cool. Anyway, all right, we're out of here. Thanks for listening, and we'll talk to you next time. So until then, be good.